into the theater and the usher nods me in. They know me here. I descend down the staircase behind the movie screen that only select people know about. The door at the bottom opens and I walk in. The sound of movie spoilers fill the air. The barkeep has my drink ready and motions me to the back. The rest of the crew are here already. This is my type of place and these are my type of people. Join me as we discuss the inner secrets of cinema. Have a seat in the spoiler room.
And welcome to another episode of the Spoiler Room. Hope you enjoy our new theme. We're kind of changing things up here, always looking at trying to evolve and bring new things to you. And tonight, I've got a great crew assembled. It is Women in Horror Month. It's Women Recognition, recognizing those women who bring us some great horror films. And so tonight, I figured, why not do an episode in honor of those women and have the crew bring one of the films that they really enjoy that's a horror film, and it's directed by a woman. And so we've got a great crew for us here tonight. First off, in the His House is back, Mr. Cole Meredith is here. Hello, Cole. How are you, sir?
I'm phenomenal. I feel grateful to be surrounded by these talented people. Thanks for having me, man.
Well, we're glad to have you back down the stairs into the spoiler room with us tonight. And next to him is the diva of the spoiler room. She is back once again. Hello, Dawn. How are you?
I am fantastic. Good evening, gentlemen.
Evening.
Good evening, my friend.
Always a pleasure to have Dawn in the room. And another pleasure is the BFD himself. He is here with us tonight. The one, the only, it is Mr. Glenn Bittner. Hello, Glenn.
Hi.
I am suddenly very creeped out now. I better get my holy water ready. And last but definitely not least, he's here with us tonight. It is the man, the myth. It is Scotty D is here with us tonight. Hello, Scott. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. Doing pretty good. Glad I could be here. It's an important subject.
It is an important subject, especially, I think, now more than ever, it is an important subject of supporting and discussing women in horror, not just the ones that are in front of the camera becoming 9 times out of 10 the victims of a slasher. But we're also tonight talking about these, the women who go behind the camera and bring you some horror films. And so I've asked the crew members to bring one to discuss tonight. And so we will start with Mr. Cole Meredith with his film. Cole, what film did you bring this evening that you wanted to mention?
I picked The Voices, which is a Ryan Reynolds-headed movie directed by Marjane Satrapi. And I rented this movie 2014, maybe 2013. I can't remember exactly, but I rented it on a whim. I was on a Ryan Reynolds binge at the time. I was one of the few people who enjoyed Change Up. I thought that was just the switching of roles I thought was funny. And after I'd watched that night, I went and watched like 3 other movies of his. And this was one of them. And I had no idea it was a straight up horror movie. I really feel like it is. And in fact, in prepping for the show, I went over about 3 or 4 different best horror movies directed by females lists. And this was on none of them. The other ones that were in my head, like Pet Sematary and Near Dark, you know, some of the obvious choices were all on that list, but this one wasn't. So I thought I'd just like to highlight it. But interestingly, this is a film where perhaps, you know, the feminine touch isn't as pronounced, which is maybe why it makes it so important to me. This is just a very, very creepy film, predominantly because many Hollywood movies sort of portray drugs for mental illness as being bad or being unnecessary. You know, Donnie Darko comes to mind, and there are many other films like that. This movie, when he isn't on his meds, it's very clear that things are going horribly awry. It also contains top-notch performances by all of the women in the cast, who, despite the fact that they all end up with their heads in a refrigerator, it doesn't feel like they were demeaned or victimized. I mean, not victimized, but it just doesn't feel like they were demeaned at all. I mean, it really feels like these characters were strong. And aside from maybe the first victim, but again, it's fairly obvious who she was, but you really feel for these women, and you really sort of get into the head of a psychopathic killer. You see what he sees, and it's absolutely astonishingly horrifying. I thought it's a horrifying film. It's also downright hilarious. One of those movies where sitting through the credits is probably essential. And of course, you know, the best subliminal voices by somebody's pets ever. And Ryan Reynolds did all the voices of the pets. I'm sure most people listening know that, but he did. He did all those voices. I've done so many tribute posters for this movie. It's so inspirational. The cinematography is amazing. I think Ryan Reynolds is phenomenal. Again, all of the actresses are top notch. People call it a black comedy, but to me, this is a horror film. This is a straight ahead horror film. This is meant to get into your psyche and really challenge sort of how you see human nature. But yeah, I'll stop there. I love the voices. It was surprising to me. I didn't know what I was getting into when I put it on. But it's one of my favorite films of that year. Whatever year it was released, it's a phenomenal work.
It was made in 2014, got the wider distribution release in February of 2015.
Gotcha.
Yeah, I remember seeing this. And it surprised me quite a bit what type of film it actually was, because I can see where people have come in for the comedy part of it, because in the beginning with the talking animals, you know, it's humorous. And the characters, the voice actors doing the animals, they are rather humorous at first. But as that film goes along, it takes a dark turn. And then there is a twist. And again, as Scott would like to remind everyone as well, this is the spoiler room, so prepare yourself. but when it's revealed what is actually going on with his character, what I liked about that was the fact of it suddenly makes the audience uncomfortable for laughing prior to that, because it's you suddenly realize what actually is going on, and it is horrifying. It is scary. It takes that turn to where you're going, oh shit. and that's what I liked about it. And as a film in general, I think it's solidly made. Don, would you say as far as the technical aspects of this film, the cinematography and that, this film is made very well?
It is. I there's a lot of things that I actually do fully appreciate about this film. Mm-hmm. I like that the perspective of the film, as you mentioned, is you're seeing it from Jerry Ryan Reynolds' perspective. You're seeing they're trying to show what he is seeing. And every once in a while, you get the breakthrough, like you said, when he's on his medication, you get the breakthrough of what the world actually is and what he's hiding from himself.
Indeed.
And that is truly horrifying. The female characters are, yes, they're fantastic. I did not get the sense of them, aside from being, you know, murder victims. I did not get the sense of any weakness. They were all strong, independent women in their own rights, who went out and got what they wanted and, you know, tried to, even the first victim, was very much, well, you know, not really interested in you, but, you know, you're a means to an end, so I'm going to get what I want out of you, and oops, well, I guess that didn't turn out so well. The subject matter, the subject matter is kind of a trigger issue for me, so I'm kind of going to let that be. But as far as the technical aspects, how it was shot, the cast was really... really good. I'm not a Ryan Reynolds fan, but he did a really good job in this because, you know, he was playing that role.
He was playing that role, yes.
Mark, did he do all the voices? Am I correct on that?
There's been some discussion. There are a couple credits on IMDb for the voices, but it's rumored those are pseudonyms and that he actually did do the voices of the animals, which it would make sense. Actually, now it's corrected. When this first came out, looking at the voices, the credits, they must have corrected it, because when I first did this, I think got an early look at it through a screener. They had some different names for the voices, but now looking at it, they do have him listed for all the voices.
I was gonna say, I triple checked it, man.
And I'm just looking at it now, so I stand corrected. But when I first looked this stuff up, they didn't have all the voices credited by him.
Gotcha.
They had them in some pseudonyms, which would make sense considering the character, and it makes sense that those the creature, the his pets would be voiced by him.
Yeah, you know,
it does make sense. So,
well, if I'm wrong, I apologize.
No, you're right. No, you're right. It they were all done by him and done very well. And okay, another reason why I like this film, Anna Kendrick, but that's a whole other.
Well, of course, I wasn't gonna say that because I automatically pigeonhole myself, especially with my beautiful girlfriend.
I joke, but Anna Kendrick, I think, has talent, and I think she needs a new agent because the roles that she gets cast in are pretty much all the same.
Side note: whoever hasn't seen Mr. Right, highly recommended.
Yes, that I totally like. 100% fist pump agree with.
But she's good in this. Everybody, as Dawn said, all the female actresses in here are done well. As Cole and Dawn both said, they none of them feel like they were weaker characters just because they ended up being victims. So
yes, man.
Yeah, definitely. I recommend it. Don't expect it to just, when it says a black comedy or whatever, yes, there are funny moments in it, but it gets darker as it goes along, and I like that. And so just be prepared for that because it is the reality of what's going on in this film is pretty freaking horrific. So
just thinking of it, I feel a little dirty, to be honest.
Yeah. Great pick there, Cole, the voice.
Thank you.
Yeah. I was glad to see that on the list because I appreciated this film quite a bit with it, though it had a bit of an odd ending. But other than that,
I love the ending. I love that whole, ending scene when the credit, when the credits were rolling. That was hilarious.
Yeah. I'm a bad boy.
So yes, check out The Voices, folks. Definitely should be on your list if you have not seen it. And we're going to jump now to Glenn's pick. Glenn, what film did you want to talk about tonight?
Duck. The Babadook.
Nice. Tell us about Babadook.
Oh, man. This movie. First of all, this is a directorial debut for the director, Jennifer Kent, who also wrote the film. It's about a woman, Amelia, and her son, Oscar. Her son, Samuel. And it's after the death of her husband, Oscar, in a car accident. And eventually this monster manifests itself from this little storybook that she's reading to her son, Mr. Babadook. This tall, kind of pale guy with the top hat and black coat. This movie, now, there are people, I have found that people either really, really like this or they really, really don't like it. And I, out of the people I've talked to who don't like it, a lot of them, I think, miss a lot of the point of the story. This is much more, this is psychological horror. The creature itself, the Babadook, isn't so much an actual, like, movie monster type thing. This is more a physical manifestation of Amelia's grief, because she has not been able to deal with the death of her husband. And it doesn't help with the fact that her husband died on her son's birthday. So she sees, every time she sees her son, especially around his birthday, it brings up the memories of her husband's death. And that all manifests itself as this creature, the Babadook. It's just, it's so bloody brilliant, I think.
Scott, how about you? Have you seen the Babadook?
Hey, looking over there. What's going on? No, there's a couple of these movies this time. I'm not as prepared as I usually am. There's a couple movies this time out where I just didn't get a chance to see them. Mm-hmm. And this is one of them. I think I had started to watch this movie and I just wasn't in the right frame of mind for it. So sure. I turned it off like after like 15 minutes with a kind of the thinking that, okay, now I got to go back and like watch it from the beginning later on. And I never kind of got around to it. I think it was like a combination of being in the wrong frame of mind, just thinking that the kid was an annoying little shit. And so I thought, well, that's not the right approach to go into this movie as. So I'll step away from it from now and come back later, but I never had a chance. I'm sorry.
Nothing to apologize for. Again, tonight, just wanted to discuss some of these, and I knew not everybody would have probably have seen them all. So
no one's seen mine either, so it's okay.
Dawn, how about you and the Babadook?
Well, I actually just saw this for the first time today.
Nice.
I had the same kind of. I watched the first 10 minutes of it and then got distracted. So I hit pause, and that initial first 10-15 minutes, I'm just like, oh my God, what an awful mother, what an awful child. I was really annoyed. So I really had to concentrate to go back into it, but I'm so glad that I did. Because like Biff said, it is very psychological. There's a lot going on in the movie. There's a lot internally that without making the effort to sit down and watch it, you're probably going to miss a lot of the dysfunction, a lot of the little things that are absent in their relationship.
Yes.
Between
yes.
the mother and the child. And it does. It is super creepy.
Yeah, this is a film. I mean, modern horror usually has this reputation of relying on the jump scares. And in this one, I don't think I've... when I watched this film, I was creeped out by the Babadook with the voice and the shadow and how they portray this thing. Really touched that inner child of looking under the hiding under the covers. I thought it was very effective. And what I enjoy about this film quite a bit is that it's got a bit of an enigma to it in the ending. And some people say there is, and some people say there isn't, but I like that. I like the fact that you have a bunch of people who can watch this film, and when they get to the very end, they can discuss and try to figure out exactly what the ending meant to this film and what exactly is going on, you know, and what the film is about. At least I think they leave it open for interpretation. You don't think so, Glenn?
I suppose one could say that. I kind of got what I think the ending is supposed to be in that. You know, with it, the creature being locked up in her basement now, mm-hmm. it is she has is that you can't beat the monster.
Mm-hmm.
You can't defeat it, but you can kind of learn to live with it.
Right.
And that's what this is. And that's what I got from it. And after reading what Jennifer Kent herself had to say about it, she used an example of what's his name? Russell Brand.
Mm-hmm.
Talking about addiction, how it's there every day. No matter how your life is going, it's still there. So the fact that she has this moment where she's with her son and she's actually celebrating his birthday on his birthday, which she could not do before, but that thing is still there. So she still has to appease it so that she can live her life. There are people, you know, it's, I'm glad they didn't go with too often. There's one of two things that'll happen in so many horror movies is one is the monster's beaten. Everyone's happy. Yay. We get our happy ending. Now everyone's good and they can sleep at night. Or two is the monster's defeated. Oh, but right at the last second, no, it's not. And this one just says it's still there. It doesn't play the games with it's gone forever and they're going to do this jump scare at the end. And they don't do it's defeated. It's still there, but she's found her way to deal with it.
I agree that the whole kind of metaphor they were going for with the monster is very effective, and it is an interesting ending that you don't expect to see in a horror film, especially like this. Cole, how about you with The Babadook? Did you dig this film?
Oh, yeah, man. I mean, Glenn said some amazing things. I can't elaborate on much past what he said. Also, Don said some great things. I do remember when I used to put together, you know, my best of lists before I realized that my place is not as a critic. I'm nowhere near as talented at that as you guys. I'm just a filmmaker. But I used to put together, you know, these are my five best picks, whatever. And S.E. Davis, is that the actress's name, lead actress?
The lead actress was, I believe that was her name.
I seriously thought that she could have been a potential nominee for Best Actress of the Year. I mean, I really do. That performance is phenomenal. She does an amazing job with balancing all of the elements that, again, Glenn touched on. This isn't a standard horror movie. This isn't a horror movie where, you know, at the end, everybody walks into the sunset, and it isn't the type of, let's say, Robert Shea-enforced Nightmare on Elm Street-esque ending where all of a sudden the monster's there for no goddamn reason. This is a very, very calculated and I don't want to say subtle, because if you watch this thing in surround sound, it's not subtle. it's a very, like Glenn said, it's psychological. Like Dawn said, you have got to pay attention or you're going to miss it all. And on a personal level, for me, having made a film about child abuse myself, this is one of those movies where, you know, parental negligence can come into play, which I think is definitely highlighted by the death and burial of the pet. I think, you can't get rid of the monster. Something bad has happened to this woman. And how she's going to let it affect her and her child is extremely important. And to me, that's what the film is about. I love it.
Well, one of the things that I enjoyed about it, too, with a film like this is Jennifer Kent, I thought, did a decent job of at least leaving a little bit to question whether or not she was, you know, the Babadook was actually there or if it was internal and her reactions were affecting her child. And it wasn't the fact that, you know, because at his age, you tell him, oh, there's a monster outside while you're both hiding under the covers. At that age, he's going to believe the parent. So I thought she handled it very well in the enigma, leaving at least a little bit of questioning going, well, is the mom just going crazy or is there actually something there? And yes. So I like how they played with that. through this film. So, and it surprised me. It was, you know, it was one of those films where it surprised me that it got the wider, in a good way, the acknowledgement that it did, being pretty much an indie horror film. So that kind of gave me, you know, hope for other indie horror films, which many have come out since with The Babadook. But yeah, it's an excellent choice. Thanks for bringing that one, Glenn, because yeah, it's one of the few modern horror films that creeped the hell out of me when I watched it because of the sound design and the sound of the creature and everything. So excellent choice on that. And Dawn, how about we go with you and your choice tonight?
My choice is Jen and Sylvia Soska's American Mary. And American Mary is the story of Mary Mason, a medical student who is hard up for cash, and things happen. Bad things happen to her, and she ends up delving into the world of underground elective surgeries and self-mutilation. Well, not self-mutilation, but I'm drawing a blank on what it's called.
Body modification.
Body modification. Yeah. And whew, what an inventive and wonderful vengeance she gets on those who wronged her.
Yeah, she gets some... I really enjoyed this film quite a bit. What I enjoyed about it was, if you saw the first movie by the Soska sisters on a shoestring budget, the Dead Hooker in the Trunk, they took a leap with this one as far as production quality goes, and just overall the film itself compared to the first one. You could tell they were able to get more financing and tell the story they wanted to tell. And yeah, I thought it was great. Catherine Isabel, definitely as Mary Mason character, is one that stands out for me as a memorable modern horror character. You know, one of those kind of standout ones, especially it's cool to see people even cosplay her. You know, you see it in, I've seen it in pictures in that. So yeah, American Mary is really a strong film. Scott, have you seen American Mary?
Yes, I have. I'm so happy. Not only have I seen it, I got to tell you that when I made, I do make best of lists and stuff like that. And it made my 10 best list of the year it came out. I immediately grew. It was the first Soska's film I'd seen. And I love Soska's. They are so cool. I love everything about them. I love their movies. I love the way they treat their fans. I even love their game show. And this film was so chilling, and it wouldn't have been... It's a film where I describe it to people and they never want to see it, is the problem with me. Is that as soon as I describe what she's, you know, doing to get her revenge, they're like, nope, out. I'm like, but they deserve it, out. But this film wouldn't be so great if the Soskas did not care about character. And they've done a lot of different types of movies by this point. You know, they started out with, you know, as you said, the Dead Hooker in a Trunk. After this, they did a sequel to like one of the worst damn movies. They did See No Evil 2. And the sequel wound up being good because it cared about character. American Mary really succeeds because it cares about character. It cares about people's motivations. It cares about what they went through. It is heartbreaking to see what what her ambitions are and how they are just callously stripped away from her.
Yes, yes.
And how it becomes, you know, these horrible misogynistic actions of people, it can destroy someone's life and, you know, prevent them from going on. She goes through such pain and such heart and such anguish, and she never stops throughout the whole film going through pain and anguish, but she does find a new purpose in life, a new mission in life, and she is able to kind of transform herself through it, and you watch her all while she does this. It's a really amazing piece of work. It's one of the best horror films of the new millennium. I really believe that. I love American Mary. I love the Saskas, though. I love everything they do. They're just fantastic filmmakers, and they branch out into everything. They're writing comic books now, and they're doing all sorts of different things. So
we got that show Hellevator.
Which is fun. Mm-hmm. And
it is.
They're great. I love the Saskas.
Yeah. Cole, how about you and your feelings with American Mary?
Oh, man. I should start by saying the lead actor of my first film, Eric Schandelmeyer, he's done a lot of body modification. And I can barely recognize him anymore, but he's never been more successful. You know, I mean, he is a massively successful tattoo artist, and I have nothing bad to say about the process. I just want to preface by saying that. Aside from that, I think the biggest theme of the film, at least what I take away from it, the couple times I've watched it, is you can't change what's inside of you. And I think that's evident in the very last scenes. This movie also has one of my favorite quotes. Hold on, let me switch tabs and see if I can pull up my notes here. The adrenaline rush you get from slicing into a human being may help you through even your most sleep-deprived days. Wow. And
that's true too.
Yeah. No, I really have to say, man, I watched this movie once with my beautiful girlfriend a few years ago, and I was in the midst of making a movie, and it's one of those sort of times that showed me, like, when I'm making a movie, I shouldn't go online, because I just watched it again yesterday and again tonight, and I can't say this is not my favorite movie of all time. I mean, this is a really good fucking movie. I'm going to use my one F-bomb. Every spoiler room, I give myself one. You're PG-13, right?
We're rated R.
Good. But no, I would never want to have you edit shit for nights on. Oh, did I just say shit? Twice.
Well, fucking A, Cole.
I am in love with this movie, and in fact, I'm actually kind of getting welled up just talking about it, because the credits just rolled again, and I have a lot of good things to say about this movie. I'm not going to cry, but I really think this is a phenomenal film. If I had a slick cinematographer, you know, if I wasn't doing all of my own camera work, I would hope that my movies would look like this. What is there bad to say about this movie? There's nothing bad to say about it. This is true blue American horror, people. If you haven't seen it, I highly recommend spending the money. Go out and get it, because it's worth a watch. I'm sure there are things I'm missing that I need to say, but I won't eat up everybody's time. I'm so in love with this movie. I'm in love with the lead actress. I'm in love with, I mean, here, let's put it this way. If anybody is a fan of Escape from LA and that little scene with Bruce Campbell in the middle of it, this is kind of like that, only treated with sincerity. Not that I love John Carpenter. Let me rephrase. I mean, this is...
It's okay, Cole, he's not going to listen to this ever.
I know. Body modification. I mean, Jesus, what's that skit by... I forget the comedian who says, you know, when you get facelifts, so you don't look younger, you're eternally caught somewhere between 50 and 53. You know, it's like you're constantly wincing or something. I mean, it's a horrifying concept, but yet she has to go there because she isn't allowed to be herself by these dominating rapists. I mean, rape has created nothing but monsters, and rape is created by nothing except monsters. And I'm sorry. I love this film. I'm getting emotional and I'm stuttering, but I love this film.
That's okay. Glenn, how about you with American Mary?
American Mary. Yes, I have seen it. No, just kidding. No, I like this film. I love the Soskas. I had to put them in their own box on Twitter because, oh my God, are they on Twitter a lot?
Yeah.
Really? Oh, cool.
Oh, yeah. Big time.
Yeah. Yeah, I had just a general movie category, and I had to move them out of that because it was like 90% them. Because they're what I love about them is that they're very, very, aside from their actual work, they're very engaged with their fans. Which, you know, when they did like Dead Hooker and Trunk, and even when they did American Mary, it's like cool, you know, you're engaged with your fans, you know, you're these two little, you know, independent filmmakers, but I mean, they've got a pretty damn big following now, and they still, you know, talk with their fans every day on Twitter. They're retweeting them. They're responding to tweets. They're very engaged with their fan base, which I wish more people would do. I mean, to a point, you know, you reach a point where you can't, but still, they're very, very engaged with their fan base, which is awesome. And I think that it gives them a bit of a genuine quality, which I think shows through in their work. As who was saying, was it Scott or I forget who was saying about, you know, that how they develop their characters. Mm-hmm. And it shows that they care about what they're doing. I mean, their stuff is, you know, this movie's a bit off the wall. It's, you know, and the body modification is, it's an unknown thing to a lot of people. You know, you've seen people who have, you know, who have the ear gauges and whatnot, and you're like, oh yeah, body modification. But it's like, it goes way deeper than that. And,
yeah,
and
yeah.
this is even people who are big into horror, this is, you know, a lot of people are not that informed on, you know, what body modification all is and how deep that hole goes. It's a pretty deep hole of things that people will do. And I find some of it very fascinating, some of it very befuddling. but it's also this, the, well, I never do it, but hey, you know, if you want to, you know, give yourself a built-in skin corset, cool, go for it.
Dude, I have one tattoo and it hurt. I could never imagine doing it again. Holy shit.
And I like the movie a lot. I mean, it does bother me in that there's so many films where the one thing that will push a woman this far is generally, it's one of two things: her kid gets killed or she gets raped.
Mm-hmm.
And there's very little else that is, seems to be a go-to for a woman to get, like, you know, pissed or to get pushed over the edge. But, you know, this is also made by women. So, you know, I mean, I can't really say, like, you know, because it's not like it's some dude just going, oh, yeah, we'll just have the bitch get raped and that'll get her all mad. Then she can chop this guy up and keep him in a storage locker. So I'm okay with that. You know, I mean, well, not okay, you know, with the fact that she gets raped, but it being as a story part, and I can even accept the fact that the movie itself, the story, gets a little far-fetched.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's all in keeping with just the overall story. I mean, it just, you know, it's telling the story, and yeah, it's like, you know, like, no one's, they really, really haven't done like a real thorough search for this missing doctor.
Well,
oh yeah, he disappeared. And, you know, he's gone. Yeah, it's like, oh yeah, well, you know, this happens. Well,
they might find pieces of him.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, so I think also there's like so many missing people, missing persons also around town. You know.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Especially when she gets involved. So,
yeah. So, I mean, you know, and that's a given in a lot of movies like this, is that it's like, boy, they just really have really, really bad cops, don't they? Really, really just awful, awful police that are just the, oh, yeah, how many are missing? I don't know, 12, 15,000. I don't know, just like 12 a day just disappear. Just blood spots everywhere. That's all there is, just blood smears. Mm-hmm. But you know what are we gonna do? I mean, what are we supposed to do? Go out and police the city? I mean, come on.
Yeah,
no, it's a fun movie, and it's the big thing for me is just it goes and it shows things that a lot of people in general just aren't familiar with.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, man.
Yeah, the exploration into the body modification was impressive, and this was my first introduction to Tristan Risk, who plays a very interesting character in the form of Beatrice Johnson, which if you've seen Tristan Risk in other roles, it's an interesting role for her to take on. For me, I enjoyed American Mary. I gave a positive review for it when I did see it, though I did find it interesting, and I think it's one thing that may turn some people off to it, namely guys, let's put it this way. And it's not the subject matter. It's, I will say this, it's the fact of outside of one male character in the film, all the other guys in here, not just the rapist guys, but all of them were assholes.
I would even argue the one guy is.
And even the one guard.
And so the Saskas, incidentally.
Huh?
So the Saskas, incidentally, they even just recently addressed this, because there's a lot of people who thought, guys, spoiler room, I get to say it. Mm-hmm. there's people who mentioned that, I'm assuming you mean the guy who's fixated on her.
Yeah, the bodyguard. Yeah,
the bodyguard,
guy,
yeah.
The guy who's actually seems to be the nicest guy out of the whole group in the film.
People were saying no, they were giving him a pass because he had watched the video of her,
mm-hmm.
but did not mention it.
Right.
Big deal. he still watched and studied. Mm-hmm. And was really getting into a video of her being assaulted.
Right.
And he doesn't get a pass for that. So I would even argue I would even argue that the nice guy is not such a nice guy.
Wait, are we sure? I'm sorry, Scott. Go ahead.
No, I was just saying he might not be evil, but he might not be the nicest guy. Sorry, go ahead.
I just seen the film. I'm not sure that sequencing is right, although I've only seen it a couple times.
I think it's that nightclub owner that was watching the film. I think there was the one decent guy was that bodyguard.
Yeah.
The one that picked her up after she killed the security guard that found the doctor guy. There was the one
guy. I'm mixing it up. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, it's easy to mix
up. I'm not coming off well on this show.
No, Scott, it's okay. They've seen it before. But no, the bodyguard, that's what my impression too is, that one bodyguard was a decent guy. And all the other guys, even the minor guy characters, were complete assholes. And I want to preface this now. No, I'm not one of these guys who you know, protested about Furiosa. Far from it, if you've caught our episodes. But from critiquing it and reviewing it and studying the characters, and I understand it's because the movie's being told from her perspective, so those characteristics may be more prominent because of what had happened to her. But it was one thing that I saw that some people, I didn't, but some people may turn them off to it, is the fact that every single guy character in here was an asshole. Was I off on that, or is that really the case?
Well, Dawn? I would say...
I want to get Dawn's thing on it, because it was her movie. Did I get that impression on that there is only one kind of...
There was only the one... Mm-hmm. The one guy, the one that bought her the milkshake and The chocolate milkshake, and they had the conversation about that. Because she's not a vanilla girl.
Yes.
There was only the one, the nightclub owner that she liked to get to that point, because he was a complete sleazeball.
Right.
But she still ended up liking him against her better judgment. But yeah, from her perspective, all men are awful. And yeah, I can see where that would be put off putting to 50% of the audience.
I'm just saying it was an observation. For me, it didn't, don't get me wrong, it didn't have me at all bothered. I understood it, but I just could see that being off-putting for some audience, you know, who they would be watching it. Cole, what were you going to say about it?
I'm so sorry to interrupt, man. I didn't mean to cut you off earlier. I would say, so what if they are offended? I mean, that's what I'd say. Again, I'm not plugging my own shit. I'm just speaking from experience. I set out to make a feminist horror movie at one point, and in no way, shape, or form set out to write weak male characters. That's how it happened. I wrote from my experience. Most of the men in my life at that time were complete scumbags, and it was an honest portrayal of reality. Mm-hmm. And I'm a guy, a guy who was a year away from his black belt, so I can defend myself. I'm not some victim. I'm just speaking honestly about being surrounded in a world of men. I can't even begin to imagine what it would be like. To be part of the opposite sex in a world with surrounded by the dudes that I know. So right. I'll just say that.
Well, and again, I enjoyed the film. I thought it was great. I think that's true indie film in that they made a film that and story they wanted to tell, never minding and who gives a fuck whether or not it's going to reach a wider audience. And that I like that attitude. And having had a chance to actually send them a written interview a couple years ago, I love their attitude towards filmmaking and that it was they're very frank and honest with their opinions on it. And from that interview, I could see, where American Mary came from. And wow. I appreciate that quite a bit. With that, it was just an observation. Reviews, I try to pay attention to how things are written in that, and it's just I'm just glad I'm not the only one that got that impression that it was true. But again, it was coming from Mary's perspective, so it's completely understandable why those characters would be like that. And I'm not saying there aren't many male assholes out there. I'm just saying that in the context or the world of a film, there seemed to be a large abundance of those type of characters. But there's a reason why, but it was just an observation I made. I dig the film. I think, I think Catherine Isabel was fantastic and Tristan Risk was great. And it made me, seek out more of their films once I saw them in this one and I dug it. It does have a different vibe to it. So American Mary, very strong film, interesting, strong message, and the subject of body modification I don't think is handled as seriously and as extensive in other films, in many other films, as it was in American Mary. So great choice there, Dawn. And Scotty D, oh, go ahead.
Oh, I could keep going and talk about all the details in this, but that would be unfair.
Well, perhaps since everybody here did enjoy it and we've talked about it here, we could always explore it further episodes. Maybe do
an
episode with it.
That would be awesome.
But Scotty D, we're going to move on to you. What was your pick for the evening?
I brought, the movie I brought is called Mirror, Mirror, and it was a film that came out in 1990. It's kind of a riff on the old Carrie motif, and also prefigures other similar films like The Craft, before that movie came out, of course. And this film, horror films have a way of really kind of getting into the head of teenagers. If they're kind of a trashier, not a very good movie. They might just use teenagers as an excuse to bring in young audiences, maybe show some young flesh on display, and they're all caricatures. If there's something really good, then you'll get something like Carrie or Mirror Mirror or Christine or something like that. And in this case, it has this young girl who moves into this neighborhood. Young girl is played by Rainbow Harvest is the actress's name. She was in a few things in her life, and she was in like this movie called Old Enough with kind of has a small cult following. But anyway, this girl Megan, played by Rainbow Harvest, and she's so picked on. I mean, she's just constantly, people are just like trashing her and everything like that. They think she looks like a freak. They think that she's obviously very weak. Her mother is obviously kind of nuts and stuff like that. And so they're just merciless to her. And she really only has one friend in her life. And that is until she gets this, for her new house, she gets this large ornate mirror. It's a very like big mirror, and the mirror, she starts to get fascinated with this mirror, and then the mirror kind of starts to communicate with her. It starts to speak to her, and it starts to give her special powers and kill for her. It's one of those types of movies. And what was really neat about this film, as we were talking about with American Mary, is this is a film that really cares about its characters, especially Megan and her friend. And a lot of the people that she goes against are kind of – they're set up to be kind of more caricature-y. Like, for instance, Charlie Spradling of Puppet Master and Meridian fame. Charlie Spradling has a bit part as like the – who's like the rich kid in school who's big in student government and all, and she actually makes like campaign commercials that really accentuate like the American flag and her boobs and stuff. So it was like it's one of the rare like humorous points of this movie. But it's this really interesting thing because it gets into her and it's got a very feminine vibe to the movie. I guess, speaking as a guy anyway, I noticed that it seems to have a very feminine vibe as she is, and you can look at this as the mirror also kind of corresponding with changes that come as someone would become a woman, as you go through puberty changes and such like that. At one point, the mirror starts to bleed, and she's discovering her own sexuality, and as she's discovering that, the mirror starts to bleed, and she licks it up. It kind of brings to thing like, sexual awakening, menstruation, stuff like that. And it's a great movie. They've got a lot of stuff where she gets this wonderful revenge, but it's also an incredibly tragic movie because it really does seem at the beginning like the mirror knows her. The mirror sees her as beautiful. It understands her rage and stuff because it is presenting her with a reflection of herself. So it seems to innately know her and can, like, that's why it, that she, they can, that it can, they, that she has this draw to it. But also, we'll forget, when the mirror shows us something, it shows us a distortion of ourselves. It doesn't show us the actual image. It shows us something reversed. And so this film becomes something where it's, tragedy is just bound to happen because it becomes clear that, no, it's showing you this horrible this other version of yourself, and it starts to consume her more and more and more and more, and a lot of innocent people get hurt too. This film was directed by a woman. I wish I could say that she did a lot of work. She did not, but her name was Marina Sargenti. She did this film and a bunch of TV work, basically. She did another horror film for TV called Child of Darkness, Child of Light, and then a bunch of like TV episodes and stuff. And It's also written by women. It was written by a couple women who went on to write young adult horror stories. Like there was a series of young adult horror stories called Dead Time Stories that were written under the name A.C. Cascone. It was actually written by Annette and Gina Cascone, who also wrote this movie. Another thing I want to point out is that I don't really give a shit about special effects, but I like how they're handled here, and how they're handled here is also kind of going into how Sargenti handles her direction here, because everything in this movie, especially as the mirror becomes kind of more and more of an influence, everything really takes on this dreamlike atmosphere. It really starts to feel like you are in some sort of a dream or nightmare in a lot of points of this movie. And the way she frames these shots and the way there's special effects, some of them in camera, all of that, there's nothing where all of a sudden there's a special effect that seems completely out of place. And it all kind of seems like it all fits together, even if it's something crazy or if it's something subtle. There's a great cast in this movie. Rainbow Harvest, I mentioned. I mentioned Charlie Spradling's in it. Also want to mention Kristen DiTillo, who did a ton of TV work over the years. Dexter, Chris Isaac Show. She was also Janie in the Janie's Got a Gun music video. Yvonne DiCarlo is in this movie. William William Sanderson, who I just love, is in this movie. and, you know, future soap star Ricky Paul Golden is in this movie and stuff like that. Good cast. Really kind of a hard-to-find movie. I've noticed it starting to pop up on streaming services like Shudder. But it's not – it got like one – big release on DVD and then nothing. So it's kind of a hard movie to find, but Mirror Mirror is a really strange and unique movie that takes what would have ordinarily been another telekinetic horror film and does something really original with it.
Yeah, it sounds really interesting. I've had the movie poster for ages, but the movie poster makes it look a little more like a full moon type picture.
Yeah, it does.
it also has Karen Black in it, doesn't it?
Oh, Karen Black. Yes, I'm sorry.
Yeah,
plays her mother.
Yep. I unfortunately have not seen this film. Has anyone besides Scott seen this film?
Nope.
No, I have not.
So...
told you,
Scotty gets to roll one now, and no one else has seen. But that's why I'm glad you brought it, Scott, because I wanted to bring films like that as well.
It's weird that no one's seen it too, because this film, there are four Mirror Mirror movies.
Yeah, I thought I had seen it, man, and then I started looking into it, and I said, no, I'm in the dark here. And then they didn't have time to watch it before the show. So
They did a bunch of sequels up to the year 2000. And I have not seen parts 3 and 4. Parts 3 looks like they went like an erotic thriller motif with it. And who gives it? I don't really give a shit. And then there was part 4. I didn't see it. I saw the second one. And that one is also very weird and dreamlike. But I will say that the first film by Marina Sargenti is the winner here.
Awesome. Well, I definitely have to try to look for that film as well. It sounds very cool. I didn't realize that's what the film was about. Like I said, I had the poster and I looked at it going, oh, that kind of looks like, you know, Full Moon had done it, because the poster doesn't do it justice from the story that you're saying. So I definitely want to check that out. So I'm glad you brought that one. And I hope our listeners try to seek that film out, because it sounds interesting. Definitely would be interested in that. So, I dig all your guys' picks. I know we're going a little long tonight, but they're just, I guess I have my pick. But one thing before we get to my pick, one thing I will say about you did pick Voices, but it did have strong female characters in it. All the other picks tonight, I did have strong female leads in it. And one of the things I wanted to get your guys' opinion on before we go to my pick is one of the things that I found characteristically good and interesting about female-directed horror, and this is just going to be a natural connect-the-dots thing, but still, is how different most female characters are written in a female-directed horror film than they are in male-directed horror films. Glenn, would you say that you do get a different feel from those characters from the majority of female-directed horror films that you've seen versus male? You kind of can tell how the female characters are written. They seem to be written better, in my opinion. Would you agree with that or disagree? Or
In many of them, yes, I think they're better written.
Right.
I mean, there are some I can think of where it's still, I mean, Slumber Party Massacre.
Sure.
Is done by a woman, but it's still very sexploitation-y kind of thing. But I think in general, I think, yeah, because it's you're writing from a place you understand.
Right.
Which is why I think you also will get why you get like an American Mary, why you have so many guys who are just complete assholes. because it's they're writing from their own, from a large part from their own personal experiences. Right. And also from the fact that they're writing not knowing the actual, you know, male whatever, you know, experience themselves.
Sure.
They know what they've experienced, but they don't know, I guess, you know, the machinations behind all of how people act, of the male gender, much like guys write it. And it's like, yeah, you know, this girl's a hot, so she's a bitch. That's how all hot girls are. And it's like, yeah, it's not, no, but okay. Yeah.
Scott, what about you? Would you say that when you're, because you watch a lot of horror, like all of us here in the room tonight, would you say you can kind of tell a female-directed horror film as far as the female characters go, maybe just even in general, but especially female characters, on the whole, feel different? Yes, there's always exceptions, but would you agree with that statement? Or?
Well, yes, because they're as three-dimensional as the male characters that we usually get.
Right.
And women, here's the thing, is that, you know, men, you know, anybody who goes into, like, writing fiction or directing film, or you're doing plays or you're doing anything, and you try to take the perspective, you try to be a student of human character. You try to understand where somebody is coming from. Guys to this day still don't know what women go through, what a day in the life of a woman is. I'm counting myself on that. It's not through, doesn't even have to be through any kind of malice or anything like that. It could just be through sheer ignorance. I was sitting with one of my absolute greatest friends the other week, and we were talking about stuff like this, and I was like, you know, I'm feminist and everything like that, and I was talking about, like, I don't know how you do this, and you have to go through this and everything every day. And she says, well, yeah, but it's also the subtle things that you don't understand, that most people don't get. Like, well, what do you mean? And she'll start to say, like, when this happens, or when this happens, or when this happens. And there are all these little subtle things that I suddenly realized, oh my gosh, people do that. I may have done that. And I had no idea until it was put into words. I was ignorant, completely ignorant of it. We don't know, like, what they go through. They can finally put that, all of that, into a character, but also make them strong, give them real motivation that they're not going to get with a lot of male people. Unfortunately, not just horror, but film in general, there is still a huge discrepancy over women to men. Men make most of the movies, and people argue all the time, well, it's because women aren't just out there trying. Bullshit. They're fucking trying. They're not getting the jobs. Mm-hmm. And when you see that they are taking whatever chance they get, from what I've seen, to finally give themselves the characters that we kind of take advantage that the men have been getting all these years, that the men have been getting well-rounded characters and women haven't been. A lot of times there are guys who will go in there and they will try their best to give well-rounded women characters. They will, at their, sometimes they will get like a 80% approximation of a good, well-rounded woman character. Sometimes they'll have good intentions and it'll come out crap and it'll come out actually insulting. And sometimes, a lot of times they just won't even fucking bother.
Sure.
And I think that that's why we need so many women voices, not just because they have such an unique voice and because they should be given the chances everybody else gets, but because that's how you get real people in movies, is you give everybody a voice. And women haven't been getting the voice that they need to. Thank God a lot of that has changed in horror, but it has a long way to go.
I would agree. And I want to get Cole's just thought real quick, and then and Dawn's for because I want to know what have her tell us if we're completely off in this,
which I might be.
Cole, how about you? Would you say you can tell, you watch a lot of directed, a lot of horror films. Would you say that you can tell the difference with a female directed most of the time?
Boy, that's a really good question. Mm-hmm. I don't know that I can. In terms of, you're asking specifically, like, in terms of how the female characters are portrayed?
Well, not just female characters, but in general, but specifically, yeah, for an example, out of the female-directed films, how the female characters are usually written and portrayed. Would you say they seem to be written more solid, given...
Absolutely, absolutely, man. I run into a problem with it, though, because they often work for male producers. And right. If you look... Just for a flat-out obvious example, look at the difference between Pet Sematary and Pet Sematary 2, both of which were directed by the same woman. You watch those films back-to-back. One has big old flabby boob shots dangling in the camera, and one has a very strong female lead and perhaps the most horrifying female monster ever put on film. Mm-hmm. So, I agree. I agree. Definitely. Mm-hmm. I'm torn between it because men, as Scott mentioned, men own so much of the industry.
Yeah.
It's hard for a female director to, and for a male director too, but there are so many elements that go along with making a movie. And men own so much of the business that if you're a woman directing a horror movie, man, I cannot even imagine. I have a hard time keeping not exploitation necessarily in a bad way, but I have a hard time keeping that kind of crap out of my films, you know, and I have pretty much total creative control. So, sure. I mean, there's a huge push for it,
mm-hmm.
to cheapen what a female character can be. It's a nonstop huge push, you know?
Yep. And Don, so we can have the female perspective, since it's all guys mentioning this, what about you with female directed horror? Can you tell a difference?
In a lot of the modern horror, mm-hmm. there is a visible difference. Once you start going back a couple decades, there's significantly less of a difference simply because of things that have been mentioned. The producers not always have, if a woman directs a film, not always has the film been written by a woman. So that comes into play, what the producer wants, what the studio wants. And also the push that we're supposed to be directing like men, so you couldn't tell the difference in order to get it into mainstream and be successful. I mean, in some cases you can see a difference, in some cases you can't, but in recent decades you can definitely see a difference.
Awesome. I agree. And a lot of people may wonder, well, Mark, how do you run a podcast? Why wouldn't you close out this episode with it? And the reason I didn't is because of my pick tonight. Because all the other picks here had supporting female characters or lead female characters. And my movie has one female character that has two lines. She barely is on camera. And my movie tonight is Ravenous. Ravenous.
Oh, yes!
Ravenous is directed by Antonia Bird, who was not the first pick for this film. The male director dropped out of this film. They picked Antonia Bird, and it is a period piece set in the 19th century where we have Captain John Boyd, who is a quote-unquote hero, yet he's actually a coward, and he's sent to this remote outpost in California, and there the outpost is ambushed or basically infiltrated by a crazy cannibal. Okay, a sadistic guy, a cannibal, who they don't know at first. It stars Guy Pearce is in here, David Arquette, Jeremy Davies, Jeffrey Jones is in here. And what I love about this film is, one, I mentioned, it's one that you don't hear talked about often, but you when I do mention it, I usually get a reaction like Cole. just gave in that this film is really a great film. It's a great cannibal film. It takes a little bit of a supernatural turn. It does have comedy in it, but I just find this film fascinating. One, because I enjoy period horror pieces. And what's also great is this film does not shy away from horror elements, obviously being a cannibal film. There's plenty of blood and such in gore in here, but I watching this film, I find it fascinating because it's pretty much an all-male cast as well. And it's a really well-executed, well-shot, fun movie that doesn't take that takes a turn you may not expect this film to take. And I love it. Even down to the most annoying soundtrack, my friend Jim, he says it's probably the most annoying soundtrack you will have in a movie, and I own it. For that specific reason, because the soundtrack plays an element in making people feel uncomfortable. Even with the humor that's added in here, the subtle humor, this film is dark. It goes places you don't expect, and it's just, I think, one of the best cannibal films I've watched, and part of it is because of the performances as well and the direction of this film. Dawn, have you seen Ravenous?
I have not. It was one of the ones that I really wanted to see, but was unable to before tonight.
Okay. I would recommend it. How about you, Glenn? Have you seen Ravenous?
Yeah, I have. Something licking me, if I remember right.
Huh? There is the one where the priest character wakes up and everybody's like, what the hell? And he's like, he was licking me. He was licking me.
Yes. I mean, it's been a long time. I saw this in the theater.
Oh, wow.
Wow, really?
So that was what, 1947, was it?
No, not that old.
I forget both when, you know, and how old I am. I don't remember.
It was 99. That it came out.
So close.
But you remember anything about it that you liked about it? Did you get a kick out of it?
I did like it. I did like it quite a bit. And I mean, I like a lot of the cast. I'm a Guy Pearce fan. So, I do like period pieces in general. Mm-hmm. And I love period horror.
Yeah, I think we need more, because it's always a great setting, especially the wild frontier of California in the mountains during winter. I thought was just a great setting for this piece, and it was fitting as well. Of course, you get that Donner Party influence in on it. Scotty D, how about you? Have you seen Ravenous?
I have. Like Glenn, it's been a very long time since I've seen it, but it's a fantastic movie. There are, I'm fuzzy on some parts, but there are images I've never been able to get out of my head. The one bit is when things really start to turn and they realize that this person that they've been trusting, played by the Robert Carlyle character, isn't someone to be trusted. And he just has that insane look, and he starts approaching them, like like in that scene. I'm like, holy shit! I mean, I never forgot that. Robert Carlyle is a great actor. Antonia Bird directed this, and she's, you know, for like a 5 year, she did a bunch of stuff for the BBC beforehand. And after this movie, she didn't do another. She still hasn't done another theatrical film. And but for like a 5 year period, we had a handful of really cool films. She did this other film, first film she did, pissed so many people off. It was called Priest, and it was pissed so many people off. I mean, it started with somebody smashing a priest smashing across the stained glass window of a church, and went on from there, and talked about, you know, the Catholic priesthood, and then dealing with issues of, you know, celibacy, of homosexuality, finds out that somebody who you're supposed to forgive in confession is a child molester. How the hell do you forgive that? Really great shit. And she kind of kept, so she got this, even if she wasn't the first choice for this movie, you can see where she put a lot of these subversive ideas in this movie. I remember thinking at the time when I saw Ravenous, because I think, God, I want to say it was released by something like 20th Century Fox or somebody, or it wasn't like a Miramax or Fine Line Features or anything like that.
No, it was.
The trailers were huge. I mean, they had like Rob Zombie in the trailers and stuff. I mean,
well, I think they were trying to dress it up so that because they saw the movie and they said, "Well, this is weird as shit."
It was 20th Century Fox. Well, Fox 2000 Pictures.
It's the same thing. Yeah. I just remember thinking, like, I can't believe a major studio released this movie. I remember thinking that at the time, and it still kind of surprises me to this day. Great cast, really interesting touch. Not too many. I don't think there's too many other films like it out there.
No, there aren't, and that's why I always dig this film, is because it has a unique feel to it. And I saw an article actually about this, to where Antonia Bird was hoping that this would open up venues for bigger pictures or action pictures, because a couple other horror film directors would go on to directing big named action films, like Die Hard 2 was directed. I forgot the director's name, but
Die Hard 2 is Rennie Harlan.
Rennie Harlan. He had done a horror film, I believe, before then.
Nightmare 4.
Yeah. Huh?
Nightmare 4.
Nightmare 4. Yeah.
And Prison.
Yep. And then there was another director who directed Predator 2.
Hopkins.
Yeah. And so she was kind of hoping that this would open doors, and she truly believes that it didn't, because, especially for back then, it was her gender, and I can definitely believe that approach, you know, of why she may not have gotten another big role offered to her, because this film is directed really well. Cole, you cheered about this film. You've enjoyed this film as well?
Oh, man, I've got so much to say, and I will keep it fast. I mean, first of all, I think that's a phenomenal pick, Mark. I mean, it really is, because you're right. Are there any female characters in it?
There's just the Native American female character who's, with
David character.
But she's a side. I mean, she's still strong in the scenes she gets. In fact, she has one of the great moments at the end. But for the most part, she's in the background and not really any main character in here.
No, I'll say this, man, and this is true. Again, this sounds like a too perfect story, but it's absolutely true. A female couple who were being harassed in the small town where I used to live, fuck you, Viroqua. came over to, you know, I invited them over and they came over to watch it with me. You know, I ordered the DVD and timed it out sort of with the dinner night. And we watched it, and then we watched the film with the commentary. And the production history is so troubled. As I think you mentioned, Mark, she wasn't the first person to be nominated and to be, you know, she wasn't the first potential director. There's so much that went into the making of this film. It's one of those cases where some of their hindrances helped and some of them didn't. For instance, it was supposed to be filmed almost like the whole thing was in a blizzard. You know, everybody was supposed to be knee deep in snow for the whole duration of the film. It was supposed to be a harsh winter oriented movie. And even though it feels like that, when you go back and watch it, there's no snow basically in the flick. There's a little bit of snow, which they kind of had to find and shoehorn into whatever wide shots they could compose. But the whole movie was just supposed to be, just covered in snow. Also, when people ate the flesh, it was supposed to be, as I'm sure you know, Mark, it was supposed to be, they got superhuman powers. I mean, when Robert Carlyle is chasing his victims, he's supposed to be jumping from like branch to branch, you know, full on Spider-Man type style shit. Like, so a lot of those elements I would have been interested in seeing. On the other hand, I don't know if her approach to this project that was downright drowning, it really was, isn't the best one. I mean, she came in with an entire crew full of dudes who had already been hired and pulled off a film that, you know, we're still talking about to this day. Obviously, as a wannabe vegetarian, I'm not, because I have an addiction to cheeseburgers. this film is, you know, was made by largely vegetarians as well, which is another interesting motif. And if you watch it, it's quite obvious.
Yeah.
Man, I could go on and on, Mark. I think this is a phenomenal pick. I'm so glad you mentioned it. I think the score is terrific. Much like American Mary, I could start crying if I talked about it too much, because it's just such a good movie. It's the type of movie that when I sit down and watch it with my friends, you know, male or female, it brings everybody such joy, at least, you know, like-minded horror fans joy. I love it. I absolutely love it. Thank you for mentioning it, man.
Well, part of the reason I think I enjoy Ravenous so much is because it feels like one of those films that teeters in between the being a regular Hollywood horror and being an indie horror. It's got a great fine line that it kind of bounces back and forth, because you get a few scenes in there that feel a little more Hollywood, but then you get some things, some approaches in there that are definitely more indie feel, you know, especially with the characters in that, and adding just a little bit of humor in there as well. And the scene that I think Scott mentioned about the character going crazy, the when they go back to the cave, is the scene where they go back to the cave to investigate, because he gave the fort, all the soldiers at the fort, the story that he was the last surviving member. And so they go back there and they're starting to investigate the cave, and he starts to go crazy. And it's such a great performance by him.
Yes.
But I'm kind of glad they didn't do the over the top superpowers with it, because it works so much better with the rest of the film.
Yeah.
It has a bit of that Unbreakable feel to it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, in a lot of ways. And it ends on kind of an interesting note. And she does, the one female character in the entire film gets one of the best moments at the end of the movie. It's a movie that I think, you know, some people don't quite get, but if you just watch it, it's so much fun. It's one I go back to every so often, because it is, it's a really good cannibal film that's got a bit of a different flavor, to no pun intended, to the story that you don't always see in cannibal films. And yeah, it really is worth a watch. So we're going a little late here tonight, so I think we're gonna wrap it up quick here. I hope we've wet your whistle to go seek out horror films directed by women. There are so many women we could mention tonight that have made some great films out there that we could go on probably another hour or two. But we're going to wrap it up here tonight. So hopefully you seek these out. And yeah, let's go down the lane real quick and just give your final thought on the female-directed horror films, your feelings on them, and where they can find you at. So, Cole, why don't you start?
Oh, man. First of all, I just want to apologize. I said that rape creates nothing but monsters earlier, and I just want to apologize to anybody who's been victimized. I didn't mean it in that sense, and realize what a stupid comment that was. Aside from that, I'm not going to plug anything just to honor this specific episode. I did a feminist horror movie that deals with child abuse and many of the issues we talked about tonight. It's available for free on YouTube, Little Red Riding Hood 2013 with a Y. Little Red Riding Hood, the writing is with a Y. 2013, just Google that, punch it in. We made it for about $7,000 to $8,000, and our motif was, aside from about 8 to 9 months of research on all the versions of the story, our motif was, we're going to make a feminist horror movie and see what the hell we can do. That is available on YouTube for free. Check it out. Thanks so much for having me, man. This has been a blast.
You bet. Glad you could make it. Dawn, how about you?
Actually, I am going to encourage people to go check out womeninhorrormonth.com. There's a link on there for the blood drive and how to get involved and also how to donate. I'd also like to just mention a couple of fantastic independent female filmmakers. Tanya Atomic, who's been on the Spoiler Room with us in the past.
Yes!
Go check out thewomeninhorrormonth.com. And Jill Six at sixtape.com. Check them out. Word. They are fantastic women in horror.
Excellent choices. And in fact, Jill Six has a great short called The Stylist, which was featured recently on Shudder TV. And
yep.
In the festival season and in the festival circuit, still doing well there. And Tanya Atomic is putting their finishing touches on the sequel to Manos, Hand of Fate. Check out the interview we did on the Spoiler Room. It's on Special Mark Productions. We got an interview with her. Tanya is great. Both great filmmakers. Great suggestion, Dawn. Thank you on that. Mm-hmm. Glenn, and how about you, sir?
Well, Dawn stole part of what I was going to do.
I Sorry.
Recommend some. That's fine. It's great minds think alike. I would add one other female director, Maude Michaud.
Or yes.
Michaud, however pronounce it. I'm probably pronouncing it wrong because it's, you know, she's that, you know, French-Canadian thing. So it's, you know, I'm pronouncing something wrong. But I'd highly recommend her films as well. I mean, just find her at Maude Michaud, Michaud, whatever.
It's Maude Michaud.
Michaud it is.
Yeah, yes.
All right, good. .com. and you can just find me on the internet. Just look for me.
Awesome. And Scotty D, you?
Okay. You can find me at moviocrity.com. And I'll just reiterate everything everybody else said. Check out womeninhorrormonth.com. As Dawn mentioned, I also want to put in a note for these the great directors that were mentioned. I will say that technically in 2017, the very first thing I watched this year was The Stylist. And
wow.
it is a really good short. So, yeah, absolutely. I'll just reiterate what everybody else said and say, check all those things out.
Awesome. And I will say as well, make sure you check out all those things. I will plug another director who I had the pleasure of interviewing, Audrey Cummings. She did a film. They renamed it. It's called a Torment. The original title of it is, I believe, the name that they changed it to was Tormented. The original title was Berkshire County. She's from Canada, where it seems like a lot of these female directors that we've mentioned here in the closing have come from. Canada's got a big indie horror scene, and it's growing all the time, and there's a lot of female directors coming out of there, but also Jill Six, a lot of U.S. ones. There is a growing number of female directors, but they still need help and support, and you need to check out their stuff because there's a lot of great stuff out there
that need
to be talked about and get attention to, so that eventually we do hit a point where it is not a novelty or a unusual happenstance that there's a female director in horror films, to where it's just a common thing. We need to get to that point, and we are not there yet. There's still a lot of challenges just because of their gender that is out there. And highly recommend it. Dawn, I'm glad Dawn mentioned the Women in Horror Month, the site. They've got a Facebook group as well. Get involved, check it out. There's a lot of great suggestions, a lot of recommendations out there, and a lot of things you can do to help support it. So I appreciate everyone's input here tonight. I hope you get interested and get involved, and thank you so much. And now say goodnight, everyone.
Goodnight, everybody.
Goodnight,
everyone.